We are back. Hello and welcome to another episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. For those who are new to the show, I am Tyler, alongside with my co-host Matt. We are back together, which means as we roll into conference play, we will be bringing you new episodes of this podcast somewhere between every week and week and a half, just largely depending on really how interesting that set of games is. And so get ready, you'll be hearing plenty of us from now until hopefully late into March. It's getting to be about time to get really excited. We're right around the 1/3 mark of conference play. SLU is getting AP poll votes. VCU is in Lenardi's bracket as an at-large, and the A-10 is starting to round into form.
So before we get into today's topics, just a quick recap of this weekend. There were a few really big games. First, Dayton went on the road to beat St. Bonaventure in double overtime. The Flyers trailed just about the entire second half. And then a last-second shot by the Bonnies at the end of the first overtime didn't go in. Second overtime, Dayton held on for the win. We also had another overtime game on Sunday as Duquesne went on the road to GW, won in overtime. Really interesting game. The Dukes took a huge lead early on, scored 30 points in the first 10 minutes. GW chipped away the entire game. And then finally, the Colonials actually led by 5 points with a minute to go, but a few costly turnovers sent the game to overtime, and then the Dukes ended up taking care of business from there. And then also we had a buzzer beater as Otis Livingston II made a huge three just before the horn to beat Fordham. The game was tied at 68, and then he made a clutch three-pointer. George Mason held on for the win, a win that they really needed if they wanted to stay in contention for a regular season championship. And then other than that, the games went pretty much as expected. VCU, Davidson, and St. Louis all won comfortably at home. And then Rhode Island went on the road for a nice win at LaSalle.
And so with that, we'd like to welcome you to Separation Week in the A-10. For the most part, we've seen a lot of the top-notch teams just beating on the bottom teams. The Davidson lost to St. Joe's withstanding. But this week, we finally get to see the top teams go up against each other. And maybe we start to get a little clarity and a little separation in the top seven of the standings. So Wednesday, George Mason is at Dayton, VCU is at Rhode Island, and St. Louis is at Duquesne. Then on Saturday, Davidson is at St. Louis, and VCU is at Duquesne. And so that all leads us straight into our first Twitter question. Trent Wigand, the always great Twitter follower, a guy who has brought us many of our questions this year. Thank you once again, Trent. He says, there are like a gazillion teams with one loss or less. Is that just the better teams picking on the bottom of the league? And how are we supposed to rank and judge all these teams? Where do you have them? Well, Trent, there probably is a little bit of an element of them picking on the bottom of the league. The top seven is 23-1 against the bottom seven to this point. As I said, the one exception, that horrible Davidson loss last week to St. Joe's. So, just a quick refresher for everyone. George Mason, VCU, and Duquesne, all of their losses came to Davidson. Dayton lost to VCU, Davidson lost to St. Joe's. And the only two-loss team, Rhode Island, lost to St. Louis and George Mason.
So this has been a really interesting start to the season, just because there is just, it's very tight at the top of the standings with so many teams, as you said, Trent, one loss, or in St. Louis's case, zero losses. So I figured I'd start with them since they are the only undefeated team remaining. And they've had a really easy schedule so far. They've definitely taken advantage of playing the bottom of the conference. Their best win is at home against Rhode Island, which was their A-10 opener. And I'm a little bit concerned about them moving forward just because they've had some really close calls. They barely scraped by UMass at home. They just about lost to Fordham. That game was tied with about 2 minutes remaining. And something else that's concerned me a bit, they haven't scored more than 71 points in the A-10 yet. So offense has still been a little bit of a concern for them. Also given that they haven't run into some of the better defenses, such as George Mason, Davidson, and VCU, they haven't played any of them yet. So I'm just not sure about their offense moving forward. But they did have a big win against St. Joe's at home for their last game over the weekend. So maybe that'll be a sign of good things to come. And you really can't complain about how they've done so far because they are undefeated. You can only play the teams on your schedule. So definitely a good start for them, but I think we still have a lot to learn about this team once they play better competition.
And that sets us up for what I think is going to be the game of the year this Saturday. Davidson goes on the road to St. Louis. The Billikens obviously at the top of the standings. Davidson seems to largely be the favorite here in the regular season, just given their soft schedule and the fact that they're just a game out. But this is going to tell us a lot. And one of the big things that I'm looking out for in this matchup, Luka Brajkovic has been so important for Davidson all year. Now he goes up against a defensive monster in Hassan French, a guy who, quite frankly, is probably stronger than him, but a guy that's not going to hurt Brajkovic that much on the other end. So that's the key matchup that I'm looking forward to in that game.
Yeah, Brajkovic has been absolutely huge this year, but it's tough to see how he'll do against such an experienced and strong front court player in Hassan French, who's probably one of the best rim protectors in the league, so Davidson might have to look to the outside with players like Kellen Grady, Luke Frampton, and John Axel Goodmanson. But St. Louis also defends the three-point line well, so this could definitely be one of those low-scoring battles. And with St. Louis at home, I feel like this could be a huge opportunity for them to pick up a win. Their defense has, even though their offense has had some rough games of late, their defense has still been there every night. Even with the loss of Cartier Gordon, they're still not letting teams get up a lot of good shots. And it's always tough, especially for teams that like to shoot the ball like Davidson. Sometimes it can be tough to make three-pointers on the road. So I agree, that will be a huge game.
So another question that I think is going to be incredibly important to where this all goes. Duquesne now really faces the toughest four-game stretch of their schedule. Home for VCU, home for SLU, although that's actually in the reverse order. They play the Billikens first. Then home for Rhode Island, and then they head out on the road to go to UD Arena. And so, can they go 1-1 this week? They play two incredibly tough teams, but they get them both at home. The Palumbo Center has had a little bit more energy than you would typically see in January. And I think people are starting to rightfully get excited about this team again. 1-1 means that this team is for real, and especially if they can beat VCU, a team that they have never beaten in their program history.
So this is a huge two-week stretch for Duquesne. They are off to a great start this year in terms of record, but the truth is they still haven't really beaten anybody that would inspire a ton of confidence. At this point in the A-10, they haven't really played anybody other than a close loss at Davidson, which they could have won that game. But in terms of the non-conference, their best wins were neutral versus Radford and then a home game against Marshall. So they're still a little bit unproven. But if they could, I agree, if they could go 1-1 this week, splitting between St. Louis and VCU, that would be huge for them to prove that they are a legit team. And then the following week, as you said, home versus Rhode Island and at Dayton. Overall, I just think if they go 2-2 in this four-game stretch, then you could definitely consider them for a top-four spot at the end of the season in the A-10. But right now, they really need to prove themselves.
And at that point, I think we start to have a serious, can the Dukes make an NIT discussion? And I'm sure fans of some of these teams, Dayton, VCU, Davidson, they're rolling their eyes right now. But to Duquesne, making the NIT would matter. They've only done it once this century. And even then, they were the last team in. And with all of this being said, once again, they're going to have to show up this week. And honestly, it'll really help if the fans show up too. So Duquesne fans, if you're out there listening, come on, guys. It's like $15 to go to these games. Like, money is really not that much of an object. And as both someone who grew up as a Duquesne fan and someone who just wants to see the A-10 thrive, it would be nice to see a good environment at the Palumbo. And going off of that, a shout out to the PA announcer, Dom Arrico, one of our loyal Twitter followers. The Duquesne games I was at over the winter break, he was trying to get the crowd up on their feet which at Duquesne is a pretty useless exercise considering that the average age of the crowd is very high. But, you know what? It gave a little energy in the building, and that's something that I haven't really felt in years. I don't think I've ever heard the PA announcer at Duquesne try to get people to get up randomly in the second half. It was kind of a nice little change of pace.
So, I keep seeing this on Twitter from Duquesne's social media accounts, but hashtag PacPalumbo. You guys should show up. You have a good team this year. And it sounds like you have a great PA announcer. So, before we move on, though, from Duquesne, one of my concerns... So, as I've said, they haven't really beaten anybody, but all four of their wins in the A-10 so far have been by 6 points or less. And I've seen it before where sometimes having a lot of close wins over the course of the season doesn't always hold up come the postseason. In KenPom, Duquesne's one of the 30th luckiest teams in the A-10, or in the country, and we've seen it before. Last year, Xavier, who you all know from the A-10, they were one of the luckiest teams in the country, and while they got a one seed, they had an early exit in the tournament. Another one I think of is 2016 Dayton, who they had a great record. They ended up getting the one seed in the A-10 tournament, but they had an early exit too. They lost to Syracuse in the first round of the tournament and really struggled down the stretch. So I'm not saying Duquesne has to necessarily regress to the mean right away, but winning all these close games, especially I look at their home games against Fordham and St. Joe's, those really could have gone either way at the end. So it's a good thing for them that they have pulled out those wins. I just don't know if they can keep it up for that long, winning these close games.
So I'll let you carry on, but they had control of that Fordham game. They kind of lost their big lead a few times, but they were the better team throughout. So that's less of a 50-50 game than you would think from looking at the box score.
Well, that's true. I do know Eric Williams had a huge dunk in the closing moments of that game, but just letting Fordham hang around, that's playing with fire a little bit. But they did have the lead that entire game, so I will give you that.
So while I said that Davidson SLU is probably going to be the game of the year in the conference, I think maybe a dark horse for that title is going to be Wednesday night. George Mason heads to Dayton. Now, I want to preface this by saying that it seems like, just from the interactions that we've had with people on Twitter, that there's a pretty strong consensus that St. Louis, Davidson, and VCU are going to somehow be the top three teams in some order. Then, Duquesne and Rhode Island are kind of thought of in a tier slightly below this group. Well, four teams get a double bye into the quarterfinals, and that leaves us with the Flyers and the Patriots in what is going to be their only matchup of the season against each other this year. George Mason has looked great in conference play. Their only loss was a tough game against Davidson. And other than that, they've kind of just beat up on some bad teams. Now they get a big test against a team that I feel like they're just about even with.
Yeah, so I would say right now, George Mason, they're sitting at 5-1 in the A-10. I feel like we're finally getting the George Mason team that we expected in the preseason that was picked third place by the coaches. They've looked so good overall. They did lose a close one against Davidson, but other than their buzzer beater win against Fordham, their wins have been pretty convincing. They blew out St. Joe's to open up the season, and ever since then, they've just been playing some great basketball. So coming at UD Arena, that will be another huge test for them. Something interesting I want to point about George Mason, they recently added Jordan Miller to their active roster, who was redshirted to begin the season, but all of a sudden he's actually taken on a huge role. He started the last two games and averaged 10 points. So I know Gonar Marr has missed the last few games. He could be out for the season with an injury. So if someone like Miller can come in and take on this kind of role, that could bode well for the future of George Mason the rest of the season. And this is definitely a good time of year to be playing your best basketball, especially in a year where it's tough to get an at-large bid as an A-10 school. So far, it's tough to say because their non-conference, they had some really rough games, especially the first 2 weeks of the year. But right now, they definitely look like a top-four team in the A-10. As for Dayton, this George Mason game will also be huge for them. The Flyers sit at 4-1 right now. Their only loss was at GW in a game that could have gone either way. And then they just came off a double overtime win at St. Bonaventure. And if you watch the NBCSN broadcast, you would know that St. Bonaventure has the best home record in the A-10 over the last 2.5 years. So any win at the Riley Center is huge. Other than that, the Flyers opened the season with a huge win against Richmond, followed by close wins at GW, and then home for UMass. So far, the Flyers have pretty much won the games they're supposed to, and then they lost a game that they were the underdog in. So, I feel like it's kind of tough to predict between them and George Mason who is the upper hand. George Mason does have half a game on them in the standings. But Dayton, one thing I've noticed about them, they are second in the A-10 in KenPom, which is usually pretty good for predicting things, except for, at the same time, George Mason's rating was pulled down by a poor non-conference. And so if they're heating up now, they could be pretty even teams at this point in the season.
So these are kind of the two big potential dark horse teams. We put out this morning some A-10 title odds that we made up trying to pretend to be our own Vegas casino. And the sentiment that we got was largely that St. Louis's odds were too low. Well, that was a factor of them already having this one game cushion. That matters a lot at this point in the season. Saw a lot of people saying that George Mason at 10-1 is poor value too, while also praising Dayton at 12-1. I was actually kind of thinking the opposite myself when I put those lines out there. I kind of liked George Mason at 10-1, given A, how well they're playing right now, and B, the depth that they have to be able to weather an injury in a way that most of these other teams wouldn't be able to. And for a side note for any of you who don't follow us on Twitter, the other lines we had, Davidson at 3-1 was a very popular one. That's one that I like myself. VCU at 5-1, Duquesne at 25-1. And then the field at 40-1 for being able to win the regular season title.
So as for those figures there, I'll just talk about it a little. I came up with a few different title odds. I agreed with a lot of the people on Twitter. I thought SLU's odds were a little bit off. I thought I had them more at like 4-1 or 3-1, somewhere in that range. I have VCU as the favorite at this point, and I know we haven't gotten to them yet, but I just feel like they seem like the most talented team in the A-10 at this point. Even though they did lose a potential tiebreaker against Davidson, their defense is just nasty. They don't give up many open shots. And Dayton, I feel like, was a little bit underrated at 12-1. I have them closer at either 5-1 or 6-1. I still think that they are very much a top four team in that range, and 12-1 just seems a little bit disrespectful to me because I don't think there's that big of a drop-off between Davidson and Dayton. I have to admit that VCU is better, but between Davidson, SLU, and Dayton, I feel like they're all right there. George Mason, kind of in that next tier, they're very close too, but their non-conference still makes it hard for me to trust them over the course of this conference season.
For me, I see it this way. I've rode on the Davidson train since November. I still think they're a really good team. I still have no idea what happened on Tuesday night. Maybe part of it was just simply St. Joe's had a little extra dose of energy. They wanted to really come out and fight after seeing two key guys in Pierre Francesco Oliva and Lamar Kimball both go down with gruesome injuries. They had a lot of heart that night. That's still no excuse for Davidson losing, but the one thing that I did like in that game is it kind of felt like Kellen Grady was getting it back a little bit. And then Saturday against UMass, that team just started rolling. Luke Frampton was absolutely on fire. And the big thing for me, Grady and John Axel both have been not quite the guys I expected this year. But Luke Frampton and Luka Brajkovic are both just a whole notch better than I expected any of Davidson's role players to be.
So for Davidson, I have them as my second likeliest team right behind VCU to win the regular season title. Honestly, that's more a function of their upcoming schedule. I think they're probably a little behind St. Louis and Dayton in terms of ability. but they don't have to go at VCU or Dayton this year, which is huge for them. That's got to be up there with St. Bonaventure as two of the toughest places to play. And you did say Kelvin Grady hasn't quite had the same season that we were all expecting, but he is back from injury. And maybe this team, maybe we would be thinking about them a little bit differently had they won some of those non-conference games that he missed. I know they dropped games to Temple and Wake Forest. Two games that, if they won, maybe they would be in the at-large discussion a little bit more. But I don't know. It just seems like their schedule is such a big advantage compared to a lot of other teams that are in the title discussion right now.
Yeah, and I won't elaborate too deep on this, but my dark horse remains Mason. They have Justin Kyer to carry them through the first 39 minutes of the game. He has just been awesome in A-10 play so far this year. Really jumped off the screen in the St. Joe's game to start off the season. And then they have Otis Livingston to carry them through the final minute. He gave us the most exciting moment in the A-10 this year with his... It's not quite a buzzer beater because it happened with still a second left on the clock. But his 3 to beat Fordham. Mason's really getting it rolling right now. And I think Wednesday is going to tell us a lot about what kind of team they are.
All right, so for this question, we will wrap things up with VCU. As I just said, I think they're probably the best team in the A-10. They do have a pretty tough schedule the rest of the season. They still have games at George Mason, at Rhode Island, and at Dayton. But one thing I've noticed about VCU, all season we know they've struggled to score the basketball. Their three-point shooting has really heated up during conference play. It's up about 5% compared to their non-conference numbers. And I do know it's a small sample size, but especially their last two games against Dayton and UMass at home, they really shot the ball well. And I just feel like if their offense starts clicking, we all need to watch out for this team because we know their defense. It's among the top 10 in the entire country. So if they start hitting some shots, they're just going to be so tough to beat.
So just going into the five big games here in separation week, some quick predictions from me. As much as I have hyped up George Mason in the last few minutes, I think Dayton beats them at home on Wednesday. I'm still not sold that Mason has fixed their rim protection issue, and a rim protection issue is not the kind of thing that you want to have against Josh Cunningham and Obi Toppin. Dayton, one of the five best field goal percentage teams in the country. It's just kind of a nightmare matchup for the Patriots. Maybe it's different if it's down in Fairfax, but it's not. As for the other games that night, I think VCU is just a better team than Rhode Island. If Jeff Doughton gets flustered, Rhodey's going to be in trouble off the bat. Even if he doesn't, that's a team that the guard depth just isn't quite there, and they're not going to be able to take advantage of any kind of open threes that they could get against the press. Once again, still one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the country. And then that night, the battle of the two teams that seem to win every game by four, I'm going to say St. Louis beats Duquesne on their home court.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with those assessments. For the first two games you mentioned, I feel like the home team each has the advantage. And then for Duquesne and St. Louis, this is a huge game, so maybe if they do hashtag Pack Palumbo, that could get in St. Louis's heads. They've already had some close games on the road this year, but I feel like in that game, the more talented team wins, and I think that's St. Louis at this point.
I'm not even sure it's talent as much as just I think the more experienced team is going to win. For Duquesne, this is their biggest game of the year, part three. They've gone through that multiple times this year, whether it was against Notre Dame, against Pitt, against Penn State. And in all three of those games, they just couldn't hold up for 40 minutes. This is the kind of game where I'm just not sure all the young guys are ready. This is a team of all freshmen and sophomores, and St. Louis just isn't the kind of team that you want to run into at this point in the season.
No, if you're such a young team like Duquesne, playing against a team like St. Louis that forces a bunch of turnovers really puts a lot of pressure on you on the defensive end. That can be really tough, so we'll see. I mean, it might come down to Sincere Carey, how well he takes care of the basketball, because You know St. Louis, they're going to be tough on defense. They're going to be aggressive. And Duquesne, they just need to play within themselves as a young team. And it should be a great game, though. If Duquesne wins this, as I said, this would really go a long way in proving that they're a legit team in the A-10.
So, as for Saturday, I've gone back and forth on the Davidson-St. Louis game. I'm going to go back and forth on it 100 more times. But I just think that this is the game where Kellen Grady truly comes alive. I expect a giant night against him, for him that day. Somewhere in the mid to high 20s, I think Davidson just narrowly edges SLU at Chaffetz Arena. And then for the other game, you mentioned Pac-Palumbo. I think it's a lot more likely of a scenario on Saturday. Duquesne fans don't love to come out on the weekdays. And I just think that the formula is right for them to pick up a win against VCU. They've never beaten the Rams in program history, 0-7 all time. It's going to have to happen at some point, you'd think. But this is where the terrible first half that Duquesne played against Eastern Kentucky back in December comes back to help them. Eastern Kentucky pressed the bejesus out of them. They literally couldn't figure out how to get the ball up the court. Like, to the point that we were confused as to what was even happening in the game. And they fixed that at halftime. They've got it kind of settled down now. And one of the things that I don't think they realize is that Frankie Hughes, who's not a point guard by any stretch of the imagination, is actually really good against the press because he just puts his head down and just flies down the court. I think they're going to be ready for havoc just because of that EKU game.
That is true. The Eastern Kentucky game could give them some experience that might help them out against VCU. I feel like if Duquesne wins a game this week, it'll come in their first one against St. Louis. I just think VCU, I just think they're too much for Duquesne to handle. As for the other game you mentioned, St. Louis and Davidson, I feel like St. Louis, they've protected their home court pretty well this year. And, you know, there is a chance they could be undefeated at the end of this week. They have two tough games coming up. I feel like I'm going to take the home team in this one, but that should be a fun game.
So, carrying on to our next order of business, we want to look a little bit further into the future. Obviously, this hasn't been quite as exciting of a year as we're used to in the A-10, but next year should be much better. And that's because the current sophomore and freshman classes have both been super fun. And while we've obviously given plenty of time to this year's freshmen, guys like Sincere Carey, Nick Honor, Luka Brajkovic, we've also talked about plenty of great upperclassmen, Josh Cunningham, Justin Kyer, John Axel Goodmanson. And it almost feels like the sophomores of the A-10 have gone unnoticed. But these are the guys that are going to be here for two more years. These are the guys that are going to push the A-10 to some great heights in the next two seasons.
Four bids.
So we went through, we did kind of a mid-January all-sophomore team before I dive into my first and second teams. And apologies to a few honorable mentions that I really thought about but didn't quite make the teams. Fats Russell, Javon Green, Marcus Santos Silva, Carl Pierre, Miles Brookins, Jordan Davis, and the man whose stats don't tell the story, Tavian Dunmartin.
All right, so moving in, I'll start off with some of the guys on my first team, all sophomore. I have Charlie Brown. That was an easy pick for me. He's the leading scorer among sophomores. And we're going to start tweeting this once St. Joe's wins some games, but so much DeAndre Bembry and Charlie Brown. This guy's super athletic. He's a good shooter. And without him, St. Joe's would be doing even worse than they are. I also have Kellen Grady, who we mentioned it earlier, he hasn't quite been as good as we expected. A lot of people thought he would be player of the year in the A-10, and I definitely wouldn't say that to this point, but he's averaging over 18 a game. He also missed a few games, so maybe he'll find his footing once he starts coming back from that injury. I also have Grant Golden, who has, maybe he's one of those guys that puts up a ton of good stats on a bad team, but the numbers don't lie. 17.7 points a game, 7 rebounds. On KenPom, he's one of the most used players in the A-10. they rely on him as much as any team in the A-10 relies on their star. And then wrapping it up, I have Eric Williams Jr. from Duquesne. 13 points, 7.5 rebounds. He's another really athletic player like Charlie Brown. Gets a ton of boards for them. And on a team where Duquesne has a lot of contributors, but I feel like he's the one that stands out. And then finally, I have Jalen Crutcher, Dayton's point guard, who has 13.7 points a game, 4.1 rebounds, and then 6 assists a game. So he's always a candidate for a triple nickel, does a lot for the Flyers. 41% three-point shooter this year, and he's also averaging less than 2.5 turnovers per game, which has been huge as the Flyers have cut down on their turnovers this season.
So I really wish that I didn't switch one of my spots at the last minute, because somehow, when I absolutely did not expect this, we had the same five. Now, the first three were really easy. Kellen Grady, despite the injuries, is still putting up 18 a game. Grant Golden, the savior of Richmond, the guy who is kind of holding down the fort on a very beaten-down team. He's kind of a, to quote Bill Simmons, good stats, bad team guy. I also haven't watched a ton of Richmond this year, but it just seems surprising to me that he's putting up almost 18 points. At the same time, he is still a dominant inside presence for them. Charlie Brown, the best NBA prospect in the conference, ranked number 70 on the ESPN rankings. One thing that blew me away with him, he's averaging 4.7 rebounds a game. That just doesn't even seem logical. And I would love to know what NBA scouts think of that. This guy is a 6'8 athletic freak. There is absolutely no reason why he should be putting up less than 5 rebounds a game. And I know after watching him in person when Duquesne played St. Joe's, an anonymous listener of this podcast mentioned to me, like, hey, Charlie Brown doesn't look like he's giving it 100% the whole time. Maybe it's because St. Joe's is struggling. Maybe he just needs to expend all of his energy to carry the offensive burden. But one of the things in basketball that just drives me absolutely crazy is guys who should be getting tons of rebounds that don't. And Charlie Brown's had an awesome season, but 4.7 rebounds a game for him is just crazy. He should be at 7 or 8. And speaking of the guy who shows you that it's not ridiculous for him to be at 7 or 8, have you ever looked at Eric Williams Jr.? He's the fourth guy on my all-sophomore team. This dude is super skinny, but yet is just willing to throw his body into the paint whenever it needs to be done. 7.6 rebounds, a number that's dragged down by the fact that he kind of spent a few games in the doghouse in non-conference and it screwed up his counting stats. But physically, you just look at Eric Williams and Charlie Brown next to each other, and you would think that Charlie Brown is the guy averaging 8 rebounds. So just for sake of the A-10 and for sake of wanting to see A-10 players succeed in the NBA, I really hope that whatever's going on with Charlie Brown in terms of rebounding, he's able to bump it up. As for Eric Williams Jr., he's just having another great season. The counting stats aren't what they were last year, partially because of him missing those games, partially because Sincere Carey's taking on a more dominant role in the offense, but he still remains one of the best possible A-10 prospects Duquesne has had in years. And then my last guy, Jalen Crutcher, the captain of my all-underrated team. He's in a situation where Josh Cunningham might be Dayton's best player. He's certainly Dayton's most talked-about player, but they can't afford to go without Jalen Crutcher. And quite frankly, they were lucky to survive double overtime against St. Bonaventure without him. This guy is the engine to this team. He has made so many clutch plays that you really can't account for in the numbers.
Yeah, as for Jalen Crutcher, we were both really worried when he fouled out right before the first overtime, because he's one of the few guys on Dayton that can create his own shot around the perimeter. And as you said, he is just so clutch. And also, getting back to Eric Williams, you mentioned his counting stats aren't quite there this year. I wasn't super concerned about that just because I feel like he's got a lot more talent around him, so I don't think Duquesne needs him to do quite as much. Now that they've both of the Hughes, Sincere Carey, I don't think they need him to shoot quite as much. But overall, in terms of athleticism and talent, I definitely think he's one of the best.
Well, him and one guy that I have on my second team, Jordan Goodwin on St. Louis, these are kind of the two captains of the... Their stats aren't quite as good as the player is team in the A-10, where Jordan Goodwin contributes so much on defense, and he's just a good all-around player. And you go to look at his stats, 10.3 points a game. It doesn't seem that impressive to the naked eye, but he's just such a critical piece to what has been the best team in the league so far. And Eric Williams kind of fills that same thing. He's made so many huge plays. He has two final two-minute putback dunks in A-10 games, both of which gave Duquesne the lead in the tie game. He's just all around the floor. He's the guy who helps to space things and clear up the lane, typically draws the other team's best defender. And so that's why I'm willing to go with him for the first team, even though he's scoring less than the other guys on there.
So with your mention of Goodwin, I'll move into my... what would have been my second team, since I started coming up with honorable mentions, and I ended up with five guys, so I just made it a second team. Jordan Goodwin would have been the sixth man on my first team, and I'm actually surprised. I thought he would have better stats than this, but I feel like that's just a function of St. Louis not scoring that many points, so none of their players really have stats that jump off the page. I also had Hassan French from St. Louis. I think he's one of the best post defenders in the conference, but his offensive numbers are a little bit underwhelming, especially his field goal percentage is lower than I would have expected. And then I also have Michael Hughes from Duquesne. This might be a recency bias since he just hit a monster game against GW, but he's averaging pretty close numbers to Eric Williams. He's got 12 points a game, 6.6 rebounds. He's also second in the A-10 in blocked shots and third in field goal percentage. And then wrapping it up, I have Terry Nolan Jr. for GW. I think it's pretty clear he's their best player, and he's another guy. Without him, GW would somehow be even worse. And then you had him as an honorable mention, but I have Marcus Santos Silva from VCU. This one, his stats aren't great, 8.5 points, about 7 rebounds, but this is just an eye test one for me. When I've seen VCU play, he's really impressed me, especially on defense.
So my team... Goodwin, who I already talked about, his teammate Hassan French, one of the great defensive anchors in the A-10, putting up 8.6 points a game, 8.1 rebounds. He's just another guy where, to the naked eye, if you don't watch SLU, the scoring numbers just aren't that impressive to you. But he's not a guy who really needs to score to make an impact, although making a few more free throws would certainly help. But... He's their rim protector. He's their solid brick at the back of their defense. And he and Goodwin are the guys that allow players like Javon Bess and Fred Thatch to be able to give more of their energy on offense. Terry Nolan had kind of a down game yesterday against Duquesne because of foul trouble. But to anyone who hasn't watched that much of GW, he is certainly their best player. Just a guy trying to carry a team through a tough season. They haven't been the same without Arnaldo Toro. And Nolan is really the reason why they have a decent record in the A-10 and aren't just feeding at the bottom. Michael Hughes, sorry about misspelling your name again yesterday on Twitter. He has really come alive in the last week or so. Battled an injury throughout most of December, then had the flu. And in the GW game, he showed his two-way versatility. 11 points in the first 4 minutes when Duquesne just simply decided that they were just going to throw him the ball every single play until GW did something to stop him. And then showing off on the other end with multiple huge block shots in overtime. My last guy is actually a player that I almost put on my first team that you left off entirely. And that's Jacob Gilliard for Richmond. 16.1 points a game, 5.6 assists. I've just been really impressed by him in the few times that I've seen the Spiders this year. And I'm probably watching the wrong games. Like I said, I haven't caught a ton of Richmond. But he's looked more impressive to me than Grant Golden actually has, even though the stats aren't as good. He's their steady hand. he's the reason why they've been able to survive the injury to Nick Sherrod and, quite frankly, been about the same team that we expected them to be with Sherrod. And I think he's really one of the most underrated players in the conference.
I really regretted leaving Gilliard off either of my teams because you just read off his stats. They are impressive. And this is a bad reason, but I didn't want to put two Richmond players on here. Just given the season they've had, it didn't seem fair. I also considered Nathan Kao from Richmond. He was very impressive in the Dayton game a few weeks back. And he just seems like one of their better rebounders and athletic player for them. A couple other guys I considered but didn't quite make the cut. Carl Pierre, he's one of the best three-point shooters in the A-10 from UMass. And then Jordan Davis from Dayton. If this was just about the last 2 weeks, he would potentially be one of the players of the year because he's averaged 19 points a game in that span. He's really stood out for Dayton, but over the full season, the numbers just aren't there for him. But there is a lot to look forward to. With all of these sophomores coming up, most of the teams in the A-10, I would expect to get better, at least the ones at the top. And obviously, this has been a down year. We're looking at one or two bids. Probably not three. We probably lied to you when we made our Twitter account name. But it is what it is. Hopefully the next couple years, though, with these sophomores, they should get more experience, they should become better players, and most teams in the A-10 should continue to improve.
So that'll bring us to our next segment, our favorite segment, Where He At? It's kind of an interesting time for this. The guy that I started researching yesterday turns out actually switched teams this morning, and great to hear it, but one of my favorite A-10 players of all time to watch, Justin Tillman, a guy who I both hated watching my teams play against, but at the same time held so much respect for his game, just as a scrappy rebounder and a guy who cared, you could always tell, cared more about winning games than he did his own stats. But he was playing with Wonju Dongbu Prami in the Korean Basketball League. Played 11 games and averaged 25.5 points and 11.7 rebounds for them. Well, this morning he decided to come back to the U.S., got claimed in the G League by the Memphis Hustle, the minor league team of the Memphis Grizzlies. So he will now be joining forces with none other than Yuta Watanabe down on the Hustle. So if you're an A-10 fan and you can figure out how to watch the G League, the Memphis Hustle could be of serious interest to you. Good to see Justin Tillman getting back to the U.S., though.
That's a great one for Where He At. Justin Tillman, like you said, one of the guys that you hated to play against. He was never that flashy, other than his hair. But every time, it just seemed inevitable that at the end of the game, he'd have 14 points and 12 rebounds. So, great player. All right, so for my Where He At, I picked Kendall Anthony, Richmond's point guard from 2011 to 2015. One of their all-time leading scorers, he had 1,909 points as a Spider. In October, he signed to play in Iceland, and after just 8 games, he was purchased by a team in the French League, and I don't know if there's a French pronunciation for this, but it looks like BCM Gravelines Dunkirk, so I'm just going to go with that. And I wasn't able to find any stats from his time in France, but before his transfer, in Iceland he was leading his league in points, assists, shooting percentage, and free throw percentage, so maybe this will be a step up in competition for him because it seems like the Icelandic league had absolutely no answer for the 5'8 point guard.
So, that'll take us to our final Twitter question of this episode. One of our both new favorite accounts on Twitter, Not Chris Mooney, who you can give a follow to, at Not Coach Mooney. It's just a funny account if you're a fan of Richmond basketball or the A-10 in general. And he kept it really simple. Do we like the way that the Richmond Spiders are competing?
All right, thanks for the question, Coach. We've really enjoyed getting tweets from you. It's been fun. You're already one of our favorite followers, so keep it up. I think Richmond, they've competed in every game this conference season. You know, the Davidson game, that was a tough one, going at Belk Arena. That's one of the tougher places to play against a very well-coached team. And it's just unfortunate that Luke Frampton got really hot. He made 8 threes, tied Steph Curry's record. You might have heard of him. But 8 threes in one game, they just were all going in. And then right before that, they lost to another well-coached team in Duquesne. They just had an answer against them. And I know Richmond, they have the worst defensive efficiency in the A-10 so far, but, you know, you've said it on Twitter, eventually those open shots have to stop falling. And when they do, you just need to watch out for the Spiders. And, you know, on a serious note, like I said earlier, I didn't put them on my sophomore teams, but Nathan Kao and Jacob Gilliard, they're good players. Grant Golden, obviously a great player. I don't know, maybe Richmond, they're a hard-working team. They compete every night. Just hasn't translated to wins.
So they're 1-4 in conference against a pretty brutal schedule. Now, granted, they got annihilated twice, both at Dayton and at Davidson. But their two home games against Duquesne and Rhode Island both were fights to the end. And the one game that they've had against a bottom half of the league team, they smacked GW up in D.C. So my opinion of them really hasn't changed that much from where it was at the beginning of conference season. I think they're one of the more frisky teams in the bottom half of the league, one of the ones that I would certainly be more afraid of on a random night, just given how good their top two players are. I would put them at probably 10th or 11th, but we're going to start to learn a lot about them this week. They're at St. Joe's, and then they're home for St. Bonaventure, two games that are very winnable. I think they have a solid chance to avoid opening night at the A-10 tournament and slide in somewhere in that 8th, 9th, 10th area. And if I had to really put a number to it, I would say 10th.
In terms of talent, it seems like Richmond shouldn't be a bottom four team. Just obviously, injuries have hurt them this year, but the three sophomores that we've been talking about, they're all very solid A-10 players, so it seems like they should be doing better than they are, and they have had a tough schedule to start the A-10 season. I don't know, Richmond fans, you know what you need to do, just stay patient. Hopefully for your sake the wins come, but it has been tough so far, and they have had some close losses, but it's just, anytime somebody has a record-breaking night against you, or record-tying night, that's frustrating, and Luke Frampton, he got very hot the last game.
Yeah, and so with that, one error that I want to mention, I brought up Davidson's performance from Saturday, said it was against UMass. In my haze of the 4 straight NBCSN games, I was getting that confused. They actually beat Richmond in that game. But other than that, thank you guys once again for listening to the 3-Bid League podcast. Like we said, we'll be coming at you now somewhere between once a week to once every 10 days now that we are both back at school and not trying to use Skype to record these. Any questions that you have, please just send them to us at our Twitter account at 3BidLeaguePod, or you can send it to our email, 3BidLeaguePod@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. Please tell a friend if you've enjoyed this podcast. Please send us questions. And let's get the A-10 that second bid.